Welcome, everyone. I am Julie Bieland, and we're recording live in my sensitive empowerment community. And today's topic is high sensitivity and sexuality with Sarah Matthews. Sarah is a licensed marriage and family therapist currently practicing in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and specializes in highly sensitive individuals, relationships, and sexuality. She feels passionate about being present with clients as they are, while supporting them in exploring and navigating their unique human experience. She is a high sensation seeking and highly sensitive person and is also part of the LGBTQIA+ community. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here and chat HSP and sexuality.
Oh my gosh, it's gonna be such a great conversation. And how neat, like I'm originally from Minnesota.
Oh, you are.
I don't know that. I'm also high sensation seeking, and I'm also part of the LGBTQ+ community. So what a cool, like, you know, combination of stuff to have in common.
Oh, very cool. Well, you'll be happy to not be here right now because we're in a cold streak. It's negative. I don't I'm ready for it to be over. So,
yeah, I know. I saw that. What I really love is that you shared with us that that you want us to know that it's okay to be the HSP you are with the sexual preferences that you have. And I really love to normalize this. Do you want to say a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. We were kind of talking about this just a minute ago, where I think, you know, start with HSP. I think, you know, a lot of us feel that we're 15 to 20% of the population. And a lot of us feel that we don't quite belong in the world somehow, and often try to adjust by keeping up, trying to, you know, what's wrong with me, trying our hardest to fit with the norm. And so just, I think with the HSP process, learning about the trait, learning about yourself, so much of it is self-acceptance, learning what you need, learning what your, you know, the superpowers of the trait, learning how to communicate that and putting a lot of that as a priority. And a lot of it goes, I think, with sexuality too, you know, that I think, well, there's lots of things to sexuality, sexual preference, gender identity, all these different things. But oftentimes there's not, I think, the way that we're socialized or society kind of grazes us into sexuality. It's not always that open to expression or exploration or understanding, or there's stigma, or there's, you know, all these things. So to be okay with yourself sexually and to be okay with yourself as an HSP with all the unique traits that it brings, or, you know, characteristics that it brings, it can be a process. And just that piece of self-acceptance is, I think, one of the biggest things of, I'd say, both. So both of sexuality and of HSP. So
what a huge piece to talk about to just normalize too, because there's still so many places in the world that don't accept the spectrum of sexuality that there really is. And, you know, even from my own experience, being raised in the majority of a small town in Minnesota at the time.
Myself as well.
Yeah, there was no internet or anything. I didn't even know other gay people. I didn't know that was an option. Yeah. I didn't know that I could have a family with a woman, you know, just things like that. So, you know, I just jumped into marriage with a man, and because I thought that's how you have children and that's how you have a family. And I think it's such an important aspect for us to talk about and to give the message of acceptance. That I've got my Love is Love shirt on today. This is the concept of acceptance, of being able to be who you are, is such a huge, powerful piece for us, especially I think for HSPs.
Oh, absolutely. And I'd say it's so much of an onion, isn't it? I think there's aspects of my HSP-ness and my sexuality that I continue to unveil and remove the social constructs and realize, like, what narratives am I still carrying around certain things and still playing out? And that, I think the piece of acceptance is such a big piece of, comes from a place of self-compassion as well. And how do we cultivate self-compassion in a way that can really hold the space for us to do some of that onion peeling? Like, what, you know, how would I like to express myself? What are my strengths? What are my sexual preferences? What feels safe and healthy to me? And it can be, it's a process.
I like that you're talking about self-compassion. That is a huge piece of my work in general, is teaching self-compassion. And it's something I didn't used to have myself. So I think about the concept, if I had had more of that, like in my own coming out process, for example, it would have been life-changing. Be able to nurture myself through that would have been life-changing, instead of feeling so alone and so confused. And you know, when people don't accept you, how terrifying and difficult that is at the time, especially if you don't have self-compassion built up and a community of people that accept you as you are. I think that's a huge piece of it too.
Oh, absolutely. And how many of us don't, right? I'm thinking of Brené Brown's work a little bit, like the difference between, you know, we're all of us want to be seen, accepted, loved, right, by our clan, by our community. And if we can't get that, we try to fit in, you know? And so it's like, how many of us are not in a community, either with HSP sexuality, whatever it is, really, where we don't feel seen, we don't feel accepted, we're expected to pigeonhole into something different. And it's really, really hard to build, or our families can be like that, right? They can be actively shaming. I mean, if you think about GLBTQIA community in particular, there's so much shame, societal shame involved with that. So how can we develop a sense of self-compassion when oftentimes the world, or even with HSP, is basically saying, what's wrong with you? Don't be like that. And that's, it's a journey to be able to do that, I think, to cultivate that self-compassion for sure.
Yeah, 100%. And to share the message that gender is on a spectrum, sexuality is on a spectrum. Yep. Oftentimes we evolve as we get to know ourselves. I mean, all of these things are such huge aspects of sexuality in general. And this is such a huge topic. Like, and you really had a chance to kind of see some of the questions that came in. What do you think is important to share today with HSPs listening?
Yeah, you know, it is such a huge topic, I think. Sexuality could be 20,000 different podcasts, and HSP obviously has a lot too. I think for today, what I thought might be helpful, since we're doing something more on HSP, is to talk about how the HSP trait, at least in my work, I've seen it show up a lot in sexual expression or sexual preferences and that sort of thing. And we can kind of start there and then kind of see where it goes. Because there are, I like to say about sexuality too, and the HSP trait, there might be some things that I talk about that they're not all inclusive, right? They're not just because you have an HSP trait and I'm talking about, you know, sexuality, that there's some tendencies, you know, for HSPs to sexually, you know, have these struggles. It doesn't mean that all sexual, you know, HSPs have those struggles, or people with HSPs might, you know, have the same struggles. Or the same challenges or the same preferences. I think with sexuality too, it is such, I like that you said a spectrum. I think with, you know, sexual preference, gender identity, you know, I work with non-monogamy and polyamorous myself, you know, I think it's just this huge spectrum that we slide back and forth on all the time. And HSP is a part of that, that can influence it and might not. So I just want to caveat that to say that I think a lot of kind of going back to our talk, or talking about, you know, unpeeling the onion and discovering ourselves. HSP might be a part of this, but it's not all of it. And so much of it is just exploring for yourself and knowing what feels comfortable and exciting and, you know, sexually healthy for you. So, So, but to start, I thought I would, I'm sure a lot of people in the HSP community that are listening know about kind of the four traits, I guess you could say, or the DOES, the D-O-E-S kind of way of understanding the trait. So I'll just quickly review that a little bit, and then talk about how I've seen it in my work, how those things can oftentimes show up in sexuality and how I help HSPs. So the first one is the D, which is HSPs tend to have depth of processing, meaning that we tend to, both internally, externally, we want to dive in deep, whether we're, I think, consciously aware of it or not. Our system, they even show on brain scans and such now, that our systems are firing off more and longer. And that might cause us to have some hesitation before making decisions. We want to gather in sensory information before making one. We might appear a little bit more cautionary. The O is for overstimulation. So, and this varies quite a bit between lots of different variables for different people. It can be sensory. Some people might feel overstimulated by certain smells, sights, emotionally overstimulated. Our thoughts might overstimulate us, but we have a systematic response of overstimulation, which is really common. The E is for emotional responsivity or empathy. So you might hear a lot of HSPs saying they have high empathy, empaths. We feel what other people are feeling. I have a little spidey sense or an interest on the side about how our mirror neurons fire more, and our mirror neuron systems are a social system. So kind of curious about, I'm sure, how that aligns. And then the S is for sensitivity to subtleties. So we may notice things that other people don't. And that isn't necessarily because we, you know, our eyesight is that much better, our taste is that much better. That's a separate thing. Sometimes people have that, but that's not part of the HSP trait. It's just that our brains are noticing and processing them more acutely. So we might be more aware of those things. So that's kind of what makes up the HSP trait. So if you think, or kind of the traits of the HSP, being HSP. So if you think about sexuality and all the things that are involved, and by the way, also saying sexuality, I don't just mean sex, right? I don't just mean the way that we think about it. You have a person with a vulva, vagina, person with a penis, and you have intercourse, right? Sex can mean a lot of different things. It can mean sensual touch. It can mean stories. It can mean penetrative sex. It can mean a lot of different things, but whatever sex is to you, or you can have sex with yourself, right? But whatever that means to you, when you think about the HSP trait and all those things I just mentioned, there is a tendency for overwhelm, for depth of processing, for overstimulation, for being empathetic or feeling what your partner or partners are feeling while you're being sexual. So that can lend itself a lot to various things that I help HSPs with when it comes to sex. So kind of just start it off maybe.
I like it. I like that you're bringing that in. A lot of HSP, especially HSP moms, talk about the overstimulation and, you know, the challenge that came up in the questions too beforehand in the community, just the challenge of being sexual when you're depleted and exhausted and your partner wants it more than you do. And that might be even something great to be able to talk about. And also a lot of HSPs talk about the need for an emotional connection. Yeah. And I wonder if you want to share any more about those two things.
Yeah. So kind of going off of maybe the latter first, you know, the need for, the other thing I'd like to mention too, is with the HSS or the high sensation seeking trait, that can also play out differently in sexuality as well. We can go into that if people are interested about how that can play out, but I just want to put that little caveat in there as well when it comes to sex. In saying that, I think when it comes to being, you know, a lot of HSPs wanting that emotional connection, I hear that a lot, more particularly with HSPs without the HSS trait. Can be both. Again, this is not boxes, right? It can be kind of all across the chart. But I think that the need to feel safe, the need to feel connected, the need to feel like you, right, if we talk about the depth of processing and that kind of holding back until we make decisions, until we know it's safe, all of those things lend itself to wanting to be really connected to the partner, really understanding that empathy, the emotional connection. So it might be harder, for example, if you just want to have a fun experience, a sexual experience that's purely physical, purely for adrenaline rush or, you know, whatever, to really get the depth of processing, the emotional companionship, all of those things that are common for HSPs in an experience like that. And to say that, it's okay, right? It's okay, I think, if both for women and for men, people with vaginas and with penises, with something in between, however you know, identify, it's okay if you feel like you are somebody that needs that emotional connection first. Or also, it's okay if you're somebody that likes a sexual experience for the physical piece of it and for the experience too. And I think it's about knowing what it is for yourself and and really being able to communicate that to your partner or partners. So
yeah, I like that. It looks like we've got some interest in the HSS part. I know that that's a, that's always a complicated experience. It's like one foot on the brake, one foot on the gas. How do you kind of find the balance in all of that?
Yeah. Well, gosh, you know, I guess I'll speak from experience on the HSS, HSP. So the highly sensitive trait is it's defines itself, or it's defined by like thrill seeking, tendency towards boredom, disinhibition. So these traits where people will tend to, people without the HSP trait, they might be out bungee jumping, which I've gone skydiving before, for example. Very overstimulating, I have to say. but so that tendency for that drive, right? That wanting that experience, that tendency towards boredom, that excitement, paired with this desire for comfort, for needing, you know, regulation from overstimulation, totally plays with like two steps forward, two steps back, forward, back. Okay, now, right? Like now this is so fun and exciting. And now I have to go back because I've just totally overwhelmed myself. Why did I do that? So that can play itself out in sexuality and sexual experience too. So
it helps to know about it, the high sensation seeking part, because then you kind of understand that I need to have new experiences, but I also have to pay attention to giving myself downtime for that overstimulation. Yeah. I think that's such an important piece to understand about yourself in general, especially with sexuality. And then maybe going into some tips about, because I know I've heard this so many times in my practice too, about that, you know, maybe tips for, especially for HSP moms who feel depleted, who have a hard time being sexual, who feel that pressure from their partner. Maybe we could give some tips about that today.
Sure. You know, a book right off the bat that I would highly, highly recommend is Emily Nagoski's book, Burnout. She has a book called kind of the, I guess you could say the first one, Come As You Are, which is a great read. But she developed the second book, I think it was with her sister, called Burnout. And it's all about the stress cycle. And as we know about HSPs, our stress cycles and our anxiety, just it's more, it's just more frequent, easier. So highly recommend that for everybody, but especially for HSPs, the Burnout book by Emily Nagoski. But when I work with, and I work mostly with, you know, cis women with vulvas, vaginas, I talk a lot about the difference between, not the difference between, but maybe working with sensuality. I think so often we, in slowing down, mindfulness, sensuality, I think, especially in those scenarios, there's so much pressure, right? There's pressure to perform, there's pressure to be a certain way, our partners are pressuring us. We lose our sensuality. And what I mean by sensuality isn't necessarily sexy, right? What we might think about it, it's our senses, our sense of smell, our sense of touch, and in a way that is pleasurable to us. As HSPs, we often are annoyed by smells, or, you know, overstimulated or agitated. But what is it like to really, really slow down and feel what it's like to take a slow shower and enjoy it, right? Mm-hmm. What is it like to be with your partner or partners in a way that there isn't pressure for sex? And this might go to something that people recognize as sensate focus. It's really slowing down, being very, very mindful, taking the pressure off, really get into our senses and being really mindful about our bodies, about our sense of sensuality, maybe even just starting with ourselves. You know, I oftentimes give my clients homework to have a sexy self date. And that doesn't necessarily mean masturbation or anything like that. It can be if you want it to be, but really playing in your own sensuality, even if it's just for 10 minutes while the baby is sleeping, you know, even if it's just right. But it's that really, really slowing down mindfully and letting your body and letting yourself play with taking a nice hot shower, with cooking food. And that can really, really help reorient ourselves to the sensuality in sex. Because if we think about sex, it's very body, isn't it? It's very in the body. You're intimate with somebody. You're hopefully experiencing pleasure. And if we've disconnected due to the stress, because when we get that level of stress, and for HSPs, I think one of our coping strategies is to dissociate to some degree. If we're feeling overwhelmed or stressed, and that's not very sexy. It's not very sensual. It's not very pleasurable. So to introduce that kind of mindful sensuality or pleasure in a way that feels safe, that feels comfortable, that starts developing an experience of pleasure with senses, I always say is a really great place to start.
I like that, like the mindfulness and the connection, the development of self-love and the connection, the reconnection to our bodies. And I think grounding techniques are so great for HSPs in this sense too. You can even just body grounding techniques, patting the body down, just like, and even just, you know, putting on special lotion, rubbing it on your skin in a really loving way, like just ways that you reconnect to yourself through self-love, right? It's such a huge piece of this.
Yeah. And the key part, I think, of whatever that is, I'll sometimes spend a couple of, you know, a session or two with clients really exploring what that is. Because sometimes I ask moms or, you know, people in general, what feels fun or good to you? And they go, I have no idea, you know? And so it's this sometimes a grief process around that too, that they've lost, right? The sense of lost a sense of self. And there might be a grief around that. I don't know how to have joy. I don't know how to put myself first. I forgot how to do that. So sometimes even before that is taking a step back and having a sense of grief so that they can open up to the experience of, well, who is that now? Where does my body experience joy now? How can I bring that to my body now? You know, and for a lot of women, there might be some trauma with body trauma with the birthing process or pregnancies, and that can kind of add another layer too. So really holding the space for yourself, that self-acceptance, compassionate space to start that process of learning yourself and learning what brings you joy and learning how your body works now too is a big one. So
yes, reconnecting to your body and advocating for your needs so that you're not the one doing absolutely everything at home with no help. And that's going to cause a lot of problems with burnout. So I've seen this a lot with women getting empowered and advocating for their needs that suddenly they're like, oh my gosh, I have more energy. I actually took some time to myself and now I have energy. Because if we have kids and we're constantly with the kids and we're constantly doing all the stuff at home, and a lot of people are doing both work and home stuff all on their own, I mean, this is definitely going to create that burnout. So having, this is where connecting to yourself, really getting to know what you need and what feels good to you. I think there's so many people too that haven't really explored that, right? Like what feels good in your body? How can you communicate that with your partner? What kind of touch feels good, right?
Yes, absolutely. And sometimes, like I said earlier, we don't know, right? And then I often hear like, well, but, and I don't have time to find out because I have a million things to do, which is, you know, so much compassion for that, right? Sometimes it's like, how do I have time to have sensual time with myself and figure that out when I have a bajillion other things to do? But even if it's just 5 minutes a day, right? A couple of times a day, self-check-in. I do a lot with people around setting a timer on their phone to say body scan or self-check-in or, you know, do something lovely for myself right now in 2 seconds, right? And being very, I think the big piece of that too is being very intentional and very mindful about it. Not saying, okay, I'll put on lotion next, right?
Yes.
It's like, no, put on lotion. Observe the bottle, enjoy the pattern, smell the thing, you know, like really slow it down and really embrace the good of that. Really let that absorb that into our systems, because the stress, all of these other things we very easily absorb and take on, right? But we so often have to be so intentional about really slowing down and really absorbing the good too. So,
100%. And noticing that if you are struggling in any of these areas or you have a history of trauma, that you're working with a professional like you who can support you through that. This is so life-changing to work on these kinds of pieces within ourselves, isn't it?
Yeah, it really, really is. I think what I've discovered too, I think, you know, again, going back to how we think about sex, right? How a lot of us are still socialized into sex. There's a sex act, right? We do this thing, we're turned on, and then, you know, we have sex, we orgasm, and that's the thing. It's so much more than that. It is so much more than that. And, or it can be, it doesn't have to be, it can be that, but it can be so much more than that. And so much can come up around it. And I think having supportive partner or partners, having friends that you actually feel comfortable talking about sex with to whatever degree feels right for you, being involved in communities, reading various books, you know, if you do have trauma that is coming up, making sure that you are getting a specific support around that, because that's going to have its own, you know, its own things that you need to work through. So,
yes, absolutely. Yeah. I love that. When I used to work with couples, I used to love giving them kind of assignments to do together where they, if there was, you know, because I would hear things like, especially moms would talk about how, you know, if I, anytime like we're cuddling or something, it's like he wants to have sex. And so then I don't want to cuddle, you know? So I would like, okay, we need to shift this a little bit. Like, let's have some evenings where it's just about like a pleasurable massage without intercourse, that's not going to be part of it, right? That you can actually get to know like what feels good and have it be something that you enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that, because I think that takes, even like it takes our ideas of what is sex off the table, right? It's like, and puts a whole heck of a lot more on the table that might be fun, pleasurable, relaxing, exciting, you know, might lead to what we think sex to be. But again, there's that, even with partner or partners, right? It's like taking the pressure off, being very, very mindful, asking the questions, being excited, you know, about learning a different part of a partner's body. And for us too, as HSPs, I hear a lot from HSPs about how overstimulating sex can be. And how, right, like, oh, I don't like when my partner does this, or it was good until this point, and then it got to be too much, and then I shut down, and then I had to end it, and then it's, you know, this awful experience. So really feeling, I think with HSPs, what's important too, and this is going back to the, your HSP sensitivities are okay, is, you know, and it kind of brings up this whole other topic for me about consent, which I am in communication, which I am like, so it's like, ugh. You know, it's really knowing that what feels okay and right for you, is okay. And that it's okay to say no, it's okay to say, please stop. It's okay to say, can you move to the left? Can you move to the right? It's okay to say, can we stop and do something emotional instead? It's okay, right? And to get, and if you want something more, to ask, and to not feel ashamed of asking. And how do we ask? How do we get consent in a way that still feels sexy and not, you know, that we're stopping the whole thing? And really figuring out how that works. And that can be really tricky too, so.
I love that you're talking about this, that need for communication, because we have to be able to communicate with our partners, and each partner is different. So the only person that truly knows what feels good is us. We have to know and what's going to feel good, and maybe be, you know, and be open to communicating that with our partner. What a huge piece of that, and the consent piece. I'm glad you're talking about this.
Yeah. I mean, this is right. Like 20 different podcasts in one. And I think with HSPs, this can be a little bit tricky too, because I think with our body sensitivities, we've learned to override what our senses are telling us. You know, we might feel a twinge of something we don't, and it's not even physical, right? It can be emotional. That doesn't feel right. But we're so used to being overstimulated in an overstimulating world that we override it, and we may not say anything, or we may be in a situation where we don't want to hurt our partners. And this is true for anybody, right? Or we don't want to screw up the experience, or we can feel what our partner wants and is feeling, and we'll default to that instead. And so sometimes even the idea of consenting and knowing what feels right for us can be, I think, a lot more tricky than a simple yes or no. Sometimes it's an I don't know, or sometimes it can be, especially for HSP, and that delayed, right, need for making a decision. It can be, can you give me 30 seconds while I check in and figure out exactly what's happening for me? And to know that that's okay. And your partner or partners may not like it or not. They may say, I'm not down for this. And to know then, okay, then that's okay for them, but it's still okay for whatever it is that you need for yourself. And I think that's where, that's the practice. And that's where I think I've seen a lot of it, everybody really, to be honest, but HSP in particular, get caught up on that too. So,
Yeah. And day to day, we can be different, you know, being able to communicate that to our partner too, and to notice, to be like, you know, I notice when I take time by myself for a couple hours before we engage in, you know, intimacy together, I tend to need to fill up my tank before we do that. I mean, to have a real matter of fact conversation about it, that this is you, this is your partner wants to know what's going to be the best you anyway. And to be able to kind of get to know that with yourself is such a huge piece to communicate that. To be able to say that there's nothing wrong with you for needing that, you know, I love to just talk about things like in an educated way, like that I'm educating you about me, that it isn't something that I'm sharing like, oh, there's something wrong with me and I'm afraid to tell you, but that I'm owning that this is my experience and this is how we can have a more pleasurable experience together is when we set this up. So that might mean you take the kids for the day. And then I get to have some time to myself. I mean, these are examples of ways that we can really think about ways to restore ourselves and reconnect. Because if we're depleted, we're not going to know any of these details within us. We're going to be shut down.
Totally. Absolutely. Very shut down. And in Emily Nagoski talks about the stress cycle too, where, you know, within women in particular, she focuses on women, people with vaginas. So she talks about there's a gas and a brake, right? And so often the stress cycle is because we have things that are so on our plates and so, you know, on our shoulders that there's brakes to our sexual being sexually open constantly. It's not necessarily that we need more gas, like a sexy outfit or a new toy or something like that. Actually, what we need is to remove some of the stressors, some of the things that are creating, not creating space for our sexual sides to come out. So I listened to a talk of hers and she was joking that sometimes literally the sexiest thing somebody can do for a partner is do the laundry so it's not all over the bedroom. And that actually is foreplay, you know, and people don't understand that, but that can be true. And I think especially for HSPs, that's true because we're noticing our environment. We're already taking on the stress of the day. We are, you know, all of those things. So I love the tip of having somebody, you know, take the kids for the day so you can have some time alone and get your system regulated and in sensual space. And maybe needing a little bit more time to do that. I think that's beautiful. And that's great if it works, right? If it feels good for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And if anybody in the community wants to ask any specific questions, it's a good time to do that now. What else do you think is important to share today, Sarah?
I would probably just reemphasize going back to that really allowing yourself the space compassionately to explore and to both your HSP trait and, you know, your sexuality or your gender identity, all of these things, right? And to find communities that you feel like are supportive and see you in that, like this one for HSPs, because I think it's oftentimes in community too that we can really start exploring these things and feeling that we have a safe space to be seen. And I think that's really, really important too.
Such a huge piece. I know when I first was like kind of exploring myself inside of a marriage to a man, when I was kind of recognizing like, wow, I'm not happy. And this is something I'm going to have to explore. I remember looking for resources of like, are there resources for women coming out later? And at the time there was like no resources for that. And I was just shocked. I ended up starting my own group for this. But that's a huge piece of it. And to know that, you know, ultimately, true happiness does come from living authentically, doesn't it? And to cover up these pieces of us usually doesn't work. For myself, I got very depressed trying to cover up who I really was because I didn't want to end the marriage. I didn't want to put everybody through that. But at the same time, as I evolved and got to know myself, I knew that this had to be, it had to be my path. And, you know, and I think that's why I'm so passionate about really sharing these open messages about being who you are, that if you can find and live in a life that's authentic to you, that's really our goal. That's how we're going to find that piece of happiness that we're looking for, that piece of contentment. And yes, it can be very difficult to go through. I have had a lot of people contact me who are in marriages trying to figure out what to do. And, you know, I just want you guys to know that you're not alone. And as we get to know ourselves, this is a part of it, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. All of that. Totally. I think, and it's scary. It's scary to be authentic sometimes, especially when our authentic selves is not the norm, is not right. Is not, maybe there's not a ton of communities out there that you can see yourself in. You know, so it's a process, and to really be compassionate with yourself around that and really patient with yourself around it too, I think is really, really, really important. And to let yourself evolve, let yourself change, let that happen.
It's important to be our authentic selves and to get community, to get support. Sometimes that means friendships change. All of those things happen. Yep. We have a question that came in. What does it mean if it takes a very long time to reach climax? Does it get worse with age?
You know, this would be a question, kind of what I was explaining before. It depends on the person. So if I were to have, you know, somebody come in to me, say, for example, with that question, we would do a pretty, you know, extensive sexual history. I would say if you make sure to check in with your doctor, maybe there's something physiological there or, you know, biological there. But it can mean a lot of things. I think, there can be a disconnect between, the mind and the emotions and the body. It can mean that, maybe there's just not, you're not familiar with the sensory, experiences that feel good. There can be a lot of things. There can be trauma in there somewhere. There can be narratives playing themselves out that are stopping your body from going all the way. And so it's more of a mental thing. So it actually, to that question, it can be a lot of things. And I hear a lot of, women in particular, don't know or struggle to climax. But the why, can be very different. It can be really varied. So, and does it get worse with age? I would say not necessarily. For some people, it becomes more challenging with age. For some people, they're like, oh my gosh, I have better sex and more orgasms and more powerful orgasms in my 60s than I did in my 20s. Mm-hmm. So I think to that question, it's hard to answer with one sentence.
Yeah. And a lot of people, you know, a lot of HSPs too pop into our heads so often that we're not in our bodies anymore, or, you know, sometimes it can even improve. We've had some people in the community talking about that their sexual experience has improved with age because
they know themselves.
They've really accepted their body more, for example, than they did when they were younger. And that's a big part of it for a lot of people too. Because if we're thinking about, oh, what do I look like? We're not thinking about, does this feel good?
Totally. And right. If the whole time you're self-conscious and, oh, do I smell this way? Do I look that way? Something's not performing accurately. Man, hard to feel like, wow, that felt good on my skin, or, you know, whatever it was, or I like the way my partner is doing, whatever. So
yeah, that's where the self-work works. It's so huge to work on your own sense of self-acceptance, your acceptance of your body. I mean, all these things are such huge pieces. Like if you want your sex life to improve, that's a huge piece of it, to have your own self-love, your own self-compassion, your self-acceptance. Yeah. Changing the expectations, practicing being internal instead of external, all the stuff we're talking about. We're getting some questions about, somebody's asking, at which point do you decide it's time to see a sex therapist? And then somebody else is asking about, what are some of the resources out there?
Yeah. So to the first question, when's a good time to see a sex therapist? In sex world, sex community, I would say, whenever you feel like you want to, whenever you feel like whatever's happening for you is really, really distressing, or you're not able to, get the support that you need. So for some people, never having sex, let's say, for example, they're asexual, is completely and totally okay for them. And that's, you know, awesome. That's beautiful. Right. And for some people, they want to have sex every day and they're not, and that's bothersome to them. So I think I would say it's time to see a sex therapist when, or particularly if you have sexual trauma coming up and it's making it really, really difficult to have a sexual or intimate experience with somebody, I would say definitely at that point, it would be good to get help around that. But aside from that, it's really if you are feeling distressed about your sex life, that's always a good time to get help. and see a sex therapist for that. So,
and the professional help's so great too, because they can help you with communication with your partner, how to communicate, how to get to know yourself, different kinds of exercises that can be supportive to you and in your own personal journey. Yeah. All of that is such an important thing.
And I think the other question was the resources, and it was at, I assume, was that the resources for finding one?
I'm not sure if they were talking about resources for coming out or if it was resources for, maybe you can clarify that in the comments. And then there's another question that came in about, do you think Tantra would be a great thing for people to explore, for HSPs in particular?
I love Tantra. I think it's wonderful, actually, for HSPs, for anybody. So for those not familiar with Tantra, I think Western way of looking at Tantra is just all about sex and all these things, but it's actually, it's one of the basis of yoga practices. So it's actually, but with this particular yoga, it incorporated sex and sexual drive and energies. And so Western culture just grabbed that and said, it's about sex. But it's all of those things. So, so I would say it's actually beautiful because it really, it has you slow down, get in your body. It works a lot with masculine and feminine energy, for those that are, you know, not cisgender. It can also be beautiful too, because it works with the masculine, feminine energies, not necessarily if you're male or female, but helps you connect with your authentic self, your authentic energies, explores different sides of yourself that perhaps have been covered by various narratives and stories in your life, and embodies it. So a lot of it is about how to embody those things through dance, through sex, through sensuality, through, so I say, yes, check out some Tantras.
HSPs could really enjoy that, the sensuality piece of that, the sensory experience of it, all of it. Okay, so they clarified resources for coming out, for women coming out later in life. I do want to mention Conscious Girlfriend is a great online resource, and I wrote a blog post about it. If you wanted to go to hspblog.com and type in Conscious Girlfriend, you'll actually see more information about it. So I would say, do you have anything else to share about that?
Yeah, you know, I'm not as familiar with that. So Julie, you might be a better resource for knowing kind of what's out there on that one.
Another question came in. I was curious if you have found HSPs to have lower sex drives. I found my sex drive greatly lowered after I had my son.
This kind of fits into the category of maybe, depends on the person. I wouldn't say I've seen it more in particular per se, you know, but I have, what I will say is after having a baby for both men and women, I have seen that is common for sex drive to go down after that. So,
That is very common. And that's where we need to advocate for our needs to have time to ourselves, to be able to restore so we're not depleted and sleep deprived and all of those things that can be. So Sarah, tell us more about how can people find you and what do they find when they find you and what do you recommend?
So if you want to find me, you can just look at sarahmatthewslmft.com. That's my website. If you want to email me or I'm happy to answer questions, say hi. If you find me, you know, on my website, for example, there's various resources on there. I started a blog and keep on going with it, but COVID happened and I slowed down. So, but they're free to reach out to me or check out my website at any time.
That's fantastic. How did you personally kind of come into your own authenticity about your sexuality, you know, given the background of messages you might've received? How did you do that for yourself?
You know, that's such a good question. So I identify at this point anyway, as polyamorous and either omnisexual or bisexual. And so I think for me, I grew up in a small Minnesota town similar to you. And I think it wasn't something for me that it's kind of that I always knew of myself, but it just wasn't something that I felt really pulled to like seriously need to explore my various environments. It wasn't, I was comfortable where I was, but I think given the opportunity, at least for me, even in the last couple of years to say, look, here's all these different sexualities and options and community and people talking about this differently and resources, I just started doing research on my own and going, oh my gosh, there, that makes more sense. Oh my gosh, there, that makes more sense. And then having various experiences, I'm like, oh, this just makes more sense. And not that the way that I had been before was bad or wrong or didn't fit to say, but just, I think in my own process, just being exposed to certain things and trying certain things, I just realized like, oh, this feels more authentic to me. This feels more alive. You know, I even had some people in my life say, you just seem like you're a lot more in your body. And I was like, yeah, you know? And I think for me, I just a lot of self-compassion, and I was still am exploring, right? And really patient with myself and taking my own HSP time I do a lot of research on stuff before I decide to try something on. And I just really am okay with that for myself. And man, do I communicate a lot to my partners around that. So
yeah. What a great role model you are. And that's such a great example too. Like you explored it, you had an open curiosity about it, you were exploring it. And then it sounds like you took time to connect with like, does that feel right to me? And you got that feeling. So that's that pulling it internal, paying attention to what feels right to you.
Yeah.
And learning more about it and finding that kind of aha moments like, yeah, that's me. And having this openness to explore all the different things that are out there, the spectrum of sexuality as well as gender, being open to all of that really opens up our minds in general, doesn't it?
Totally does. And I think removing a lot of the narratives that are at play too. I mean, still, I think in the non-monogamy world, we talk about having monogamy deep talks. And I love monogamy too, by the way, I'm not anti-monogamy. But for those of us that aren't oriented that way, you know, really pulling out the narratives that will keep us feeling shame or tight or, you know, or feeling like, no, you're not supposed to, and saying, no, this is okay. No, this is safe. No, right. And continuing to, or with, you know, being bisexual or any of those things, right? It's really opening yourself up and finding community that you feel comfortable in can help you feel safe exploring.
Yes. Surrounding yourself around people that are going to accept you. That's a huge piece of it. Having boundaries around people that don't.
Yes. And like how to have those boundaries.
Yes. You have to have boundaries and a shedding process that sometimes as we move away from that enclosed, you know, constricted place to opening up our own authentic being, we're going to shift who we even maybe want to have in our life. And that happens. Yeah. That happened to me. And I think it happens to a lot of people when they make shifts, they kind of enter into that authentic way of being.
Sometimes there's a lot of grief involved. You got to go through some grief process, even if it's a way of life that you did enjoy, like monogamy or whatever, right? You know, or, you know, it's allowing yourself to grieve, to say, that's not me anymore, or these friends don't want to come with me, or this relationship has to change for me to move forward. And I think creating space for that in yourself is important too.
Yeah, I like how you said these friends didn't want to come with me. I like to say that too. It's like, as I rise, I'm inviting people to rise with me, I'm not going to lower to go back to, you know, to where they are. So that's a huge, I like that. Somebody's sharing, I love the fact that you're open to exploring it and seeing where life takes you, not limiting yourself. Absolutely. Yeah. And somebody else saying, I'd love an HSPs and polyamory discussion from Sarah. Maybe we'll have to think about that in the future.
Love it.
Yes, definitely. And for those listening, please let us know what you loved, what you want to hear more of. And I love that we can continue our discussion in the Sensitive Empowerment community too. So I invite you, I'm going to post the text chat in it. I invite you all to join us for a continued discussion. And Sarah, it's so nice that you're in the community too, that you can sharing some after discussion with us too once it's posted.
Absolutely. Yes. And thank you so much for having me. This is so fun. And I look forward to hopefully chat now that I'm in the community, chatting with people more and being involved. So this is great.
Yes, I love it. It's going to be awesome. So we're going to put this up at the hsppodcast.com. And then definitely come join the Sensitive Empowerment community. You can do that by going to juliebielen.com. or sensitiveconnection.com to join our community, our amazing community. Sarah, what a wonderful example of sensitive empowerment you are, that you are really showing that we can be ourselves, that we can accept ourselves, we can love ourselves, that we can be authentic inside of our own sexuality, what's right for us.
Yes.
I think you've given such a beautiful message today.
Oh, good. You as well. Same right back at you. It's so lovely to meet you and be in community with you. This is so cool. Yeah.
Yes, I love it. I love it. We'll say to be continued, because I have a feeling that this is a much bigger topic for us to cover more of.
It really is. Yes, I'd be happy to talk more. Yeah.
Absolutely. And thanks, Sensitive Empowerment Community, for being live with us. We just love you and excited to connect with you more in the community. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Yes. Thank you, Sarah. Lovely to meet you. Yes. And definitely we'll be in touch in the community. Take care, everybody. Love you lots.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.